Welcome to Entrepreneur Eats, a conversation about business and community with a side of eats. My name is Deanna Smith, and I'm your host. And I'm here with our special guest, Doug Schultz. He is the Escondido City Treasurer. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Yay, thank you. I know you're super busy and the holidays are kind of crazy. So thank you for making time to be on this show and talk about some serious things and some not so serious things. And we're going to talk about first, who is Doug Schultz?
I think the most important thing is I'm a father of three, two girls, one boy. I love to surf, jiu-jitsu. By trade, I do wealth management, and then I'm also the city treasurer. So that really, I think, is the summation.
Wow, you do a lot. So what got you into wealth management?
So ever since I was little, I've always loved the markets, stocks, finance. And actually, who probably initially got me first into it was my grandmother. She helped me buy my first stock at 15. And there are a couple different stocks we bought at the time. One was called Arm Holdings, which ironically, it got bought out by a decade later. It was like a chip manufacturer. Mm-hmm. But I've always just had a fascination with the markets and everything in general. I started reading, you know, a lot of books on Warren Buffett in my teenage years. And it was always just finding kind of the right position in finance for me of what I wanted to do. So eventually, landing as a financial advisor was perfect for me because I got to study the charts, study economics on a daily basis, but also work with people every day too. So it really was a blend of the best of both worlds for me.
It's great. It's wonderful how our grandparents can influence us and have such a direct impact on our future.
Yeah. And like, it was difficult for me because my grandmother actually passed away earlier this year. And, you know, one of the things I did as treasurer is I started the treasurer scholarship, too. That's been running ever since I got elected. But that was really also in honor of her. And so she had a great impact on my life.
Wow. So. What a great way to honor your grandmother.
Thanks.
So tell me a little bit about that scholarship.
So the treasurer scholarship, I did offer two scholarships, and now it's only one scholarship because my treasurer salary got cut, so I can't offer as much anymore. But I was offering two scholarships. Now it's going one scholarship. And pretty much the requirements is anyone in Escondido High can apply for it. All you have to have is the 3.0 or above. And probably the difference with my scholarship versus a lot of other ones is I don't mind paying it directly to the student. Because sometimes if the student wants to go to a trade school, they want to do something else, I'm happy to pay for that. Like, my own personal background is I went to Palomar for 2 years before transferring to Cal State and eventually an online university. So I know very much of all people. It's like sometimes, you know, the beaten path, or you go off the beaten path, if you will. It wasn't just a four-year university for me. It was going to a two-year and then, you know, finding my way back. So, but also too, I'm because it's the treasurer scholarship, I am biased for, you know, government and finance, but it's not necessarily a requirement because I've given scholarships to everybody. So,
well, that's good. What a great program. And going off the beaten path is pretty, you know, that's how we grow.
Yeah,
definitely how we grow. I do want to say I'm sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you.
Because grandparents are really special people. They're incredible. They make such an impact. And my grandparents had a huge impact on my life. I spend a lot of time with them. And they're just special. So,
Yeah, they really are. My grandma was the glue that held our whole extended family together. And as my uncle said, it's like you get caught in the swirl where everyone's just kind of trying to figure out what happens afterwards because, you know, she left such a void. And as I'm thinking about it too, it's interesting because she kind of helped kickstart my political career as well, because she used to be on the school board, you know, back.
What's her name?
Marilyn Cloyd.
Okay.
So, yeah, she was on the school board. She got quoted that it's at one point where the school board was doing a really poor job, and she did a great job of school board, and she she said, go do whatever you do well, because you're not performing well here. And that made headlines everywhere, especially back in the 90s. So.
Yeah, if you're not doing well what you're doing, go do something else, because this clearly isn't for you. That's basically what she was saying.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, quite a few people need to be told that every now and again.
Yes.
So.
Well, as an employer of many over the years, there are just some times where people who come in and they just weren't the right fit. And, you know, when you have to let somebody go, it's the worst part of, it was the worst part of my job. How I would explain it to them was, I am holding you back from something great that you're going to do because this isn't the right fit and you need to go out and figure that out, figure out what that is. And so it was, it's always terrible to get, you know, canned or fired, but when you phrase it in a way, and I think that's exactly what your grandmother was saying, you know, stop spinning your wheels here and go do something, something else that'll make you much more successful.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, I think, a lesson I think everyone could learn earlier in life is it's, you have to figure out the where you fit and where you're connecting with your job, with other people, whatever it is. And it's hard sometimes because when you're alone or you're wanting to fit in, sometimes it's like, oh, I know I need to do this, as opposed to what you should be doing and going and finding that spot where you truly fit or you truly belong. So my background is I started working at Wells Fargo. And I was at Wells Fargo working as a teller. I was actually doing some Forex trading, and I was doing different stock trading and had some different models and algorithms that I ran. But I was going to school at the same time as I was working. So it was pretty stressful in the terms of, you know, full load at school, also working full time. And then I was trying to, you know, work my way up in the banking system. And it was interesting. I remember talking to a gentleman in the Forex department or in the FX hedge fund area, asking like how my performance was and everything. And I think it was like 3 months later, 2 months later after that, you know, 08 hit. It really derailed my career, of the career I was thinking I was going, and I had to pivot. And it, you know, took a long time because the banks were on a hiring freeze for 4 years. Mm. Unless you were in the top 0.0001%, I mean, you were just nothing. They were just laying off people.
So when did you realize, do you have like one moment in your history that you were like, oh, this feels good, this is where I'm supposed to be, that moment where it clicked and you just knew that this is what for you?
I always learn by doing the, by taking the hard road. And as I was going through Wells Fargo, I was doing testing actually for what's called the CFA, the Chartered Financial Analyst. And the CFA, you get it over 18 months and you take three tests 6 months apart. And this would be equivalent to like your master's or much harder. And the questions in the CFA are extremely difficult. And they're very specific accounting questions where you have to know the formulas, you have to know every single nuanced thing about bookkeeping. Because I thought, well, I want to go be an analyst. And after taking the first test, and I didn't pass. So the CFA alone has a 33% pass rate on the first test. And this is all people who like want to do that, right? So it's a really, really hard test. So after taking this, I kind of realized like, hey, this isn't the way for me. And I started really gearing more towards the financial planning aspect and like studying for that. Because after going through that process, taking the classes, everything, I was realized, no, I like working with people. I like, you know, that aspect of it. And that's really my bread and butter. So it's from there that set me on kind of the path to where I am now. So.
That's good. Let's talk about how the 1% tax increase will affect the quality of life in Escondido.
I think we're already seeing the change in Escondido and how people can, how council can position things differently. As an example, the emergency declaration they just issued. Because now they know they have funds coming in, they have an arsenal that they can combat things with. And what people don't really realize is like, the jungle wasn't cleaned up because the initial price tag was $6 million. And so now in this latest article that's coming out, it was $4 million to clean up. And I think, and I don't know the details, to be honest, because council's been dealing with it. But from the little I know, my guess is that it's a lower cost because they are able to declare the state of emergency. But because now they have, you know, $25 to $30 million coming in per year because of sales tax, now they can do these things. And I think the first order of business that what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of police, a lot of fire trucks get fixed. That has to be priority one. There's over $100 million in deferred maintenance costs.
How would we catch up?
That's the thing. We wouldn't. And it's when I talk to people, I've looked at every other possible way to raise revenue fast enough to make up our deficit. And our deficit is $13 million per year for the next 10 to 15 years. And it fluctuates depending on, you know, what numbers you're running. But the main issue is it's how can you fill a hole fast enough to do that? And so you can't go annex property. I've looked at the numbers in there. Let's say, just for roughly speaking, you go annex all the property possible in Escondido. That has roughly a price tag of, this is arguable, it's a very arguable price tag, but $3 to $4 million just to do that. And it brings in revenue of anywhere between $500,000 to $1 million. So over the long term, yeah, that's great. It brings in revenue, but we're slowly doing that all the time. So that doesn't work. Cannabis was arguable. Actually, I talked to when it was a Democratic majority, I went behind the scenes and I talked to them about it because I'm a numbers guy. I was like, hey, this could work. But no one wanted to touch it at the time because it's just a political hot button. And, you know, lo and behold, Vista is being really successful with that. But I'm the numbers guy, right? So I can go say, hey, this works or this doesn't. And the council has to deal with the politics behind it. So I think you're going to see cannabis come up more. And that's going to be discussed more because it's like you can pull up any application on your phone and see everyone running around with cannabis. Like, oh, it's in our city. So if we can regulate it and control it and make money off it, you know, why not? It's already here. So that's my whole contention for that. But going back to the sales tax, the sales tax was really the only thing fast enough that could plug the hole of the sinking ship right away. And so now that we've done it, and the sales tax was designed, because if you remember 2 years ago, we had a half cent, but it's designed this time as a 1%. So not only are we filling the $13 million hole, but now we have this huge buffer to really go and do a lot of good in the city. And now, you know, Dane has an arsenal where he can really address the homeless issue. Before, you know, it's just like treading water. He doesn't have any ammunition to be able to go clean up the jungle. I mean, if you go over to the jungle that was cleaned up, I mean, it's a mess. I mean, it's very well described as a health crisis. So I think you're going to see a lot of things coming to fruition like that. I know Dane wants to build, you know, a shelter somewhere. And I don't know his updates on plans for that. But there's a lot of things that I know are in the works that want to get done, partnerships with county, et cetera. And I think a lot of that's going to start moving a lot faster now.
I know that I was at the emergency council meeting, and it was just great news to hear the productivity. Yeah. And knowing that that was possible because of that 1% passing. Otherwise, they could do nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, more and more things, like as more roads get repaired, you're going to have staff coming back to the city, I should say rehired. I mean, we're almost $4 million short of where we should be staffed. And I've talked to a lot of people. They're like, hey, I have this issue. Why am I not getting a response? And it's like, well, it's because we don't have the staff. We'd have to, you know, lay people off, or they leave because we can't pay as much. Mm-hmm. So now most of that's going to get solved. And my guess, and it's government's slow, so it's going to take all of 2025 to do it, but that's all going to be in process. So, which is, you know, very, very exciting.
It is very exciting. And what a relief, because our quality of life will be so much better. You just have to take those baby steps.
You know, for me, the sales tax was a big victory because I was able to work behind the scenes as much as I could to make sure people were well informed that, hey, this is the only thing that can really do it to fix the hole. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think, as treasurer and as my profession in wealth management, that it carried a lot of weight.
I believe it did.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. And I was really excited when we got, you know, 60% of the vote passed for it. It means that there are boots on the ground. Everybody really understood, hey, this is the situation we're in.
So. Right. What about the oversight committee? How's that coming along?
To be honest, I don't know a whole lot of how it's coming along. Other than that, it just was posted. They're taking applications. That was one of the things I really pushed for, is having that oversight committee on there. And then also, too, is when you talk to, I talked to Haney Hong, he's the Taxpayers Association. I was there just as a representative, just informational, back earlier this year, talking to him, saying, hey, what's the situation with the sales tax? And I said, hey, this is a big problem. And so we got San Diego's Taxpayers Association to endorse it, which was great. And I know they're going to be one of the ones on the committee, police, mm-hmm. fire, citizens at large, and I believe a business owner was the last one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it'll be hopefully somewhere in the arena of the Downtown Business Association or someone that the chamber will recommend. So we have a few candidates as far as the chamber is concerned, and I know the DBA has a couple also. So I feel like we're going to have a good quality person representing the business community. And it's going to be quite a job. It's not like you're going to be on a committee and you're going to vote on stuff. You actually have to be involved and understand finances and spreadsheets and all that.
Yeah, it's going to be a big job and big responsibility for whoever it is. And you've been great in terms of getting the chamber out there, being supportive, making sure the word's been out about the sales tax. And I think whoever's on the committee, it's going to be their responsibility to make sure, like, okay, we have this amount. Here's where it's going to police and fire. Here's where it's going to roads. Here's where it's going to, you know, parks and rec. Here are the improvements going on. And make sure that, especially too, that if council's doing something that maybe the people don't want, that, you know, alarm bells start ringing. I mean, it's going to be a big job. So
yes. So even though they don't have a vote or a say, what would you say is the factor that, other than their influence and their voice, why would they matter?
It's because they're representing, along with the other four members, like the whole oversight committee is really representing the people, in a sense, to speak to council and also be a watchdog. So if they see dollars going spent where they don't agree with, and this is where I think it also has to be very tactful, right? That they can't just go and yell at council or say, I disagree with this. They have to really go forward and say, hey, this is what we think the tax dollars should be spent on. Here's why. Let me lay out a case for you of what's happening versus just going and, you know, causing a ruckus. So I think the best way to do that is be in the public eye, going on Facebook, going on Instagram, you know, articles in the Times Advocate. But then showing up to council meeting and say, this is what we're seeing, or asking, like, why are you spending on this way? So far, the thing I've really enjoyed about this council is that they interact with everybody, whether it's at council or on Facebook groups. Like, I see Christian on there all the time. He does a fantastic job explaining, this is why we're doing what we're doing, and lays out the bullet points. You know, boom, boom, boom. Here. And then most people go, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So most of their decisions aren't just, you know, shooting from the hip, if you will. They're very well thought out. And I think that's where the oversight committee, they can lay these, this foundation of, like, here's why we disagree. Then it's going to be well received by council.
Good. That sounds like a great plan of action for the oversight committee. There's just not enough information to our public on what they are, what they do, what the protocols will be. So that was a really good explanation. Thank you.
And there has to be a really big difference with them, is they can't go just, you know, writing articles just because they disagree. It's a dialogue, right? And if there's a conversation, there's a dialogue, it becomes a two-way street where council can go to them, hey, are you surveying the public? Like, what are you thinking about this or what have you? So I think it could work very well and be a very beautiful relationship between both council and the oversight committee.
How soon before this committee is formed, and how soon before they're actually taking action?
They're going to be formed, I believe, quickly, starting to go through the vetting process as early as January. I mean, in a couple weeks, all this process is going to start. And But they're not going to have much say till July. And the reason for that is because they're going to start budgeting out the new sales tax measure for the next fiscal year in July. So City of Escondido's fiscal year starts July to July. So everything's being budgeted out until July. So now they're going to start making the new budget with the new sales tax revenue. So that's when you'll really start seeing their impact. Won't be, you know, till later in 2025. So they're going to have a lot of time to really establish themselves in the community, make sure they're known, hey, this is what we're doing. And I think that's when the most impact will be felt. Of course, there's going to be different meetings and things like that leading up to that where they can have influence and say, this is what we want to see, this is what we want to do. But as far as actual money being spent, it won't be for a while.
That gives them time to ramp up and educate themselves and do their homework, of course. When we have all these, the five people on this committee, do you know if there's like a report card they get, or if they're doing a good job, and if they're not doing a good job, what can we do?
I know that will be up to council, depending on how that moves and that movement, but I don't know if there are term limits, and I don't know I can't recall off the top of my head what the language is where if someone's not doing a good job, hey, you're off or whatever.
Or if they're absent or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I know there's language in there, but I don't remember what it is.
Well, it's good to know that they're just not putting a committee together and, you know, here you go, then, and you're off. There've got to be guidelines and parameters and...
The composition was such that you can have a very diverse group in the community, you know, police, fire, assistant, large business, plus you have the watchdog of the San Diego taxpayers. So you have... And that person is really representative of that whole organization. So they're going to be taking anything they see back to the San Diego Taxpayers Association and going, hey, this is what we're seeing. You know, what do you think? So they're going to have that one person is going to represent, you know, a whole group of people that are looking over everything. So, I mean, besides police, all the policemen, all the firemen, you know, chamber stuff, everyone's going to have different groups where they're really going to be tied into the interest of what's being done and where those dollars are being spent.
Mm-hmm. And I think that all those different entities will do a really good job. Right. I think that's a really good balance of perspectives. I'm excited to see what's going to happen and really relieved that there's going to be a higher quality of life in Escondido. And I'm invested in this community so many years and so many generations before me and so far three generations after me. So it's a big deal.
I'm really hoping, like, you know, my vision, and I think the other council members share my vision in this, is that, you know, back 20 years ago, maybe even longer than that, when San Marcos started revamping a lot of their funding, a lot of their goals, they started booming with businesses. And I think the goal and the vision really is not to be like San Marcos, but be able to have that same type of growth, that same type of energy, and you know, come through Escondido. And I think you see that a lot with a lot of the different projects that are going on with Palmer Heights, with some of the other things that are on the table. Now that we have a huge arsenal to fill that deficit, I think more and more is going to come to fruition. So I'm overall excited too. There's a lot going on, still a lot more to be done, and still a lot more, you know, happening in Escondido. So,
mm-hmm. What would you say to our residents in our community, how they could get involved, even though they're not going to be on the oversight committee?
You know, that's a great question, because sometimes I always wonder, you know, how can people be more involved, or what do you? And I think the best way is to come out to the local events. And that's the nice thing. If you go to, you know, the holiday event that just happened, you go to the Tamale Festival, you go down to pop-up Ups and Downs, there's always people there and people are always supporting the community. And I think it's keeping that in mind, talking to people about how to support Escondido, and also shopping local. You know, one of the frustrating things for me is when you go down Grant Avenue, some of the businesses just stay vacant and people ask, like, well, as a city, can't you enforce, like, making a business come there? It's like, well, you know, that hinges on freedom of speech. We can't, as a city, force a business to do something, but if you see what the council's doing, they're going to be putting the vacancy tax on there. So it's like, hey, if you aren't doing something with this, well, you got to at least pay us to maintain it, the graffiti, things like that. So it's implementing things like that to make businesses come. And once a business is here, especially once they get the vision of Escondido, the businesses that do that, that are thriving, Burger Bench, Tony Pepperoni's, Miko Sushi, all those places, like I go down to Esco Gelato all the time, it's always packed, they thrive. And as long as you're doing that, you thrive. But some of these corporate businesses, they don't, because they're expecting foot traffic or what have you. And Grand Avenue is a very, very unique place. And we're trying to build up to provide the foot traffic. One of my favorite sayings always is from John Masson. He's like, we want feet on the street. He was big on, we want to build developments around Grand, or, you know, get people out there walking and doing all that. So I think that will provide support to Grand Avenue. And then the other aspect I think that gets overlooked too is working on, you know, East Valley Parkway as well.
When you get involved in the community, you definitely, you see the result.
And as more people get involved, I think they're going to be more engaged and wanting to see their tax dollars spent well. A question I've seen a lot floating around is like, well, why is Escondido spending all the money on roundabouts? Well, that was done by grants, right? But we're still going to be able to go get grants and go be able to do those things. But now we'll have, you know, more money to do more really cool projects like that.
Yeah. So
what I really want to fight for is I want to bring back the sombrero and the snake.
Yes.
Back at Kit Carson.
No kidding.
Or wagon, sombrero and the wagon. Yeah. I want the sombrero back.
Okay. I have lots of memories on that sombrero as a kid.
Yeah. The wagon, I remember going down and basically just, you know, you go like Mach 2 and then crash at the end.
Oh, yeah.
For, you know, seventh graders, great. Or not seventh grader, seven-year-old at the time. It was fantastic.
Hey, seventh grader, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
All of the above. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about you on outside of the treasury. What you do. I understand you are an MMA fighter.
I wouldn't go as far as MMA fighter, but okay. maybe jiu-jitsu master. Okay, not even master. I'm a jiu-jitsu student. I'm a purple belt, but I've been training off and on for the last 7 years. Total training time, I'd say 5.5. But I actually just recently this year, I bought into North County MMA here in Escondido with my partner, Johnny. And that's been going great. We're excited because finally getting to do a grand reopening. We just painted the ceiling, got a new boxing ring installed. We got more bags. We got the cage is back up and running. We're just waiting on mats to do the grand reopening. So we're really excited about that. And part of my passion for, you know, MMA or jiu-jitsu is I wrestled in high school. I've always loved to wrestle. My cousin used to say, he's like, there's wrestlers and there's wrestlers. You know the wrestlers because they just start wrestling wherever they go. And even to this day, if I run into someone else, we'll just start going wherever we are. But so I've always loved it. And once I started going back to it about 7 years ago, Johnny, the owner of the gym, is like, hey, I need someone to help run the business and finance side. So I came in. And one of the things that we were able to do is we have a boxing program that we've been running at Hidden Valley Middle School. So all the youth who are having called anger issues that are looking for to you get the discipline and respect, they're able to do it through our boxing program. And we're really excited.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. It's been going great, too. We had a full class, plus we had 15 to 20 on the wait list. So we're hoping we can get into more Escondido middle schools. And our coaches right now are fantastic. We have Creed. I love the name Creed because of all the movies and stuff. But
sure.
Creed, he's there. He's a USA Boxing certified coach. Michael is too. We have Reggie. And then this gal, Cynthia, she's a USA certified boxing coach. And she also refs boxing matches all the time. And so Hidden Valley, we're hoping that's going to be our first girls program and that she'll teach that along with Creed. So we're super excited to get into all the schools, really ramp up that program because it's been going so, so well at Hidden Valley so far.
Wow. So between your scholarships and this mentoring program, you're kind of a dynamo. It's kind of cool. Cool to hear.
Thanks. I try to, you know, give back to where I can.
Yeah.
In the ways that impacted me, I try to give back. And it's the more I get involved in the gym, the more I really like it, the more I get to see the kids come in. And it's funny, if you meet my partner, Johnny, like what really got me to be partners with him. He's rough around the edges when you first meet him, but he'll have ideas. There was a kid who was hit by a car. This was almost like 6 months ago, maybe 5 months ago. I think his name is Angel, local Escondido resident. And at the time we were having a boxing event and Johnny came to me, he's like, hey, why don't we just give half the proceeds to this kid's family? Cause he was a member here. I'm like, yeah, I'd love to do that. So it's like things like that, which I love to do and make me really love, you know, being a part of the gym, to grow the boxing and jujitsu and Muay Thai. Jujitsu is my passion, so I do that. You know, I'm learning to throw a punch properly, but overall it's great. So,
wow. Where is your boxing club located and what is it called?
Yeah, North County MMA. It's right off of East Valley Parkway and I think it's Kalmia. It's right near the...
Oh, like Grand Avenue area. Well, congratulations on all your success. And you definitely are a community person who loves Escondido. It's clear.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Doug, for being on the show. This is a ton of information and a lot of surprising details of your life and how you give back to Escondido. I'm proud of you and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.